Welcome to Big Blue Golf Live right here on Giants.com, joined by Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number if you want to give us a call and talk some Giants football, or go to Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Lance and I will be monitoring that throughout the show, getting your comments and questions. I know Mr. Meadow here and Paulie Dotz went through this game a lot yesterday, so we're not going to go through a lot of the basics. But, Lance, I did take the time yesterday, and I think it just went up on Giants.com. Usually each week I write an article called The Anatomy of a Play, and I break down one play using photos from the All-22 Coaches tape. But this week I thought I want to do something a little bit different. So I took a look, and I literally watched on the Coaches tape every single defensive snap the Giants took yesterday. And I found 10 plays, eventually shortened to 5 for brevity's sake. And I basically picked out different factors in those plays that led to the Giants' defensive success. Because, Lance, to me, this is probably the best Giants' defensive performance dating all the way back. That 2011 performance against New England is pretty good. They only gave up 20 points to the Patriots in their building. But you have to go back a long way to find a defensive performance this dominating against an offense that is as efficient as the Cowboys' offense has been this year. Just all together, top to bottom, every aspect complementing each other on the defensive side of the ball, just out of this world play.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could throw in the Packers from 2011, too. They held them to just 10 points.
That's a good one.
It was a 38-10 game. A lot of games from 2011 stand out where the defense really, like you said, set the tone from various angles. But you're right. I mean, they were able to prevent Ezekiel Elliott from disrupting the game, having the big run. He only had a run that was as long as 15.
And he had, what, 6 runs between 10 to 15 yards, or 5 runs between 10 to 15 yards, or something like that,
right?
He
had 3 runs of more than 10 yards.
Is that it?
I know for a fact. Yeah, that was it. He had a 15-yard run, he had a 13-yard run, and I think he had a 14-yard run.
Okay. I thought it was more than that.
Other than that, maybe he had 4, but he had 3 or 4. It was no more than that. I may be off by 1, but he certainly had, I know, a 13, a 14, and a 15. Nothing more than 15. So, you know, they did a nice job at least containing him, specifically in the second half. Elliott had 9 carries for 21 yards in the second half. In the first half, he had 15 for over 80. So that was really a big turnaround with respect to the Giants' run defense. And then look at the receivers. You know, Dez Bryant, 1 catch. Jason Witten, Cole Beasley, 4 catches, but nothing over the top. Terrence Williams was the guy that did the most damage, and he was wide open for the touchdown. And, you know, that's a lot of playmakers I just listed who have done plenty of damage against various defenses around the league. And for the Giants to contain the passing game as well as the running game, very impressive. Especially this is a team that dominated time of possession. They averaged over 32 minutes, and they only held the ball for 29 minutes, including just over 13 in the second half. So that's what really was extremely impressive about the defensive performance.
Yeah, 3 runs for 10-plus yards in the first half, 1 in the second half.
They had 1 in the second
half. So that was 4 total, so you were correct on that. But when I watched the tape, Lance, and a lot of people on the story yesterday going around the league was, should the Cowboys pull Dak Prescott? Should Tony Romo be the starter? We don't care about that here. What I do care about is when I watched the tape, and yeah, Dak Prescott did not play well. He missed a couple of open receivers. But this idea that he played a terrible game because he was terrible, I want to slow the roll on that a little bit here, folks. I want to give the Giants defense some credit because I watched these plays, and again, you can look at 5 of them specifically on Giants.com. There were simply no options for him in the passing game where guys created separation. Out of all his pass plays that were incomplete or poor, I found 2 where there was a relatively open receiver that he didn't go to with the ball or got, you know, decided to go somewhere else with it or missed them. That's it. 2. And it's not like guys were wide open either. They were kind of open. The Giants secondary played a phenomenal game. I thought Steve Spagnuolo's game plan was brilliant. Janoris Jenkins did a phenomenal job on Dez Bryant. And I think, Lance, when you look at how they schemed this out, and this is what I was kind of caught by surprise at watching the tape, they did not stack the box against Ezekiel Elliott. And the way I saw them play in that first half, I wasn't surprised when I looked at the tape that Elliott managed to get 89 yards in that first half. Because the Giants were not putting 8 guys in the box. And I think that's also why he didn't break that long run for 30, 40, 50, 60 yards like he's done so much this year. Think about it, folks. If you bring 8 guys to the line of scrimmage, and he gets through that line of scrimmage, you have 2 corners outside. You're looking at one guy deep that has a chance of making a play and preventing a big run. The Giants were keeping their linebackers in the box. Their safeties would then come down, having more guys back there to prevent the big play. So they might have given up 3 or 4 yards, or in some cases 8 or 9 or 11 or 12.
Which they did.
But yeah. You had those safeties deep to prevent that big run and big play to wreck the game, which, quite frankly, is what Ezekiel Elliott's done to teams a lot this year, especially in the second halves of games.
Well, he wears you down because of the time of possession. But the other thing that he does is he's great at shedding tackles. And I didn't think there were a lot of missed tackles in the game, too.
Definitely not.
And when you bring him down after initial contact, then he's not going to do a lot of damage. Because there was an interesting stat, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but there was a point where Elliott had a ridiculous amount of yardage after the initial first hit. He was so effective in terms of picking up yardage. So the fact that they were able to contain him, and then I thought also they did a nice job in their open field tackling, even when Dak Prescott dumped it down. Landon Collins had a great play, I remember, on Jason Witten, where it looked like Witten had some open space. All of a sudden, Collins closes in on him, and you can say the same thing about Cole Beasley. And even when the Cowboys got big chunks of yardage, they shot themselves in the foot because of a penalty. I mean, Beasley had a big return on a punt, came back as a result of a penalty. So, you know, the Giants overall did not give any gifts to the Cowboys. And that's what you have to avoid doing when you play them.
A Beasley screen pass, I went for 10 yards, got brought back on a Terrence Williams hold. That's another good one to bring up in that situation. And that brings me back to another point. What type of play killed the Giants a lot against the Steelers? Screens. The Cowboys tried to run 2, 3, 4 screen passes in this game. Nothing doing. The Giants made their adjustment from their game against Pittsburgh, came back against Dallas, and I thought they were very strong against the screen without sacrificing pass rush. Because you know how it works, Lance. You try to get up the field to get after the quarterback.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you're leaving guys open in the screen game because you're over-aggressive. They did not do that against the Cowboys.
Well, I was also surprised that they didn't really target Ezekiel Elliott much in the passing game. He was only targeted twice. He actually wound up with no catches. Lance Dunbar is their change-of-pace type of back, and he wasn't utilized much either. But, yeah, the Giants did not give up the plays that Le'Veon Bell thrived on in the Pittsburgh game. And also, I thought they shored up their defense in the middle of the field against the tight end, because look at what Ladarius Green did the previous week. Mm-hmm. And Jason Witten has had tons of big games against the Giants. This was probably the first game in a very long time where they were able to quiet him.
Yeah, and Pro Football Focus put out a number today, and this is what I think the things that they're very good at. And I was surprised, honestly, after watching the tape at this stat. Apparently, they blitzed their highest percentage of plays this year, 36% of their plays. The Giants sent an extra guy. But you did not see a lot of 6 or 7 man pressures in this game. If they brought pressure, it was usually 5. They'd bring a corner, or they'd bring Landon Collins, a safety, in on the blitz. In fact, Eric Pinkins, who was activated last week and saw his first game action, blitzed a couple times from the secondary over the course of that game. And I think what the Giants did a good job of, when they didn't blitz, they were still getting pressure. In fact, a couple times, the Cowboys were leaving 6 guys in the block, whether it was Jason Witten or Ezekiel Elliott. The Giants only rushed 4. So they were rushing 4-on-6. They would still get pressure on Dak Prescott. Now, a lot of that was because the coverage was so good and Prescott had to hold the football.
And nobody throw it to.
But even with that, against that offensive line, when you're only rushing 4 against 6, or even in the fourth quarter, the Giants were only rushing 3, and they were still getting pressure on Prescott. We talked about how JPP's loss could hurt because he would have a good matchup against Doug Free, the Cowboys' weakness at right tackle. Well, Okwara, I thought, did a very good job against Doug Free. He also made some plays against Joe Looney, their extra offensive lineman, looking at the tape. And the Giants, I thought, did a great job of stopping the run and getting to the quarterback without sacrificing their back-end defense. Because, Lance, I'm telling you, I looked at these plays, and it wasn't even that these Cowboys receivers are covered from a great man-to-man defense. The Giants just had 7 guys in coverage against 4 wide receivers, 6 guys in coverage against 3 wide receivers. And when you have that many guys back there, you have deep safety help, and then the corners can be very aggressive in their man-to-man. Go ask the Giants. It's very hard to get open when you can have those deep safeties and play tight man and stop the run all at the same time.
Not a lot of space down the field, and I think that was well documented throughout the course of this game. I remember there was a time where Dak Prescott targeted Dez Bryant, and DRC was slightly behind him and then recovered and got his hand in the passing lane. Mm-hmm. So even when it looked as if the Cowboys had an inch of space to work with, they made some nice recoveries. Jenkins was all over Dez. They got good deflections. I thought the second interception, though, was forced by Dak, and there was a miscommunication between him and Dez Bryant, and that's why Leon Hall essentially was an outfielder fielding a deep ball. The first one, Jenkins covered Dez Bryant very well, but Dez slipped,
correct,
and then Jenkins obviously capitalized off of that. But the second interception, I thought, was an opportunity where Dak had time to throw the football, and there was just obviously a miscue between him and his receiver.
That, to me, was just a bad decision by Prescott.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're watching on Twitter, thanks for joining us. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app to check out the remainder of the show. And you're right. I thought the one interception by Prescott was a terrible decision. They had a deep safety, and you had Jenkins on Dez on that play, so there wasn't a lot of space to get the ball. And I think it was one of those deals where he was desperate to try to make a big play down the field. He was a little frustrated. Great defense by
the
Giants on
the
play. And you're right, Dez slipped on the other one. So, again, I was curious to see if the tape would look as good as the numbers and the stats. I can tell you it did. The Giants defense just did a great job, and frankly, a group that gets a lot of heat did a good job in coverage to the linebackers. And you mentioned the job they did on Jason Witten. And, yeah, Leon Hall had a piece of that, too. He came in as an extra player. They really rotated that third safety position. Pinkins was in there. Leon Hall was in there. Andrew Adams was in there, too, obviously. So I just thought overall, top to bottom, the defense had a phenomenal performance. And Steve Spagnuolo, quite frankly, had a phenomenal performance. And when you have a great scheme combined with great performance by your players, it's going to work out. One last guy I want to mention. I don't think Olivier Vernon got enough credit for the game he played yesterday. He didn't have any sacks.
A lot on Tyron Smith.
Not have a lot of sacks. No sacks. But the job he did on Tyron Smith, setting the edge and stopping the run, and also putting pressure on Dak Prescott, I thought was a key to this game. Because the Cowboys trust their left tackle, Tyron Smith, to go one-on-one, take care of business. They don't chip on that side. They don't help on that side. It's Tyron. You got it. And Vernon did some damage. He impacted the game. And usually Tyron Smith, he's 6'6 guys, you know, 3'0, 3'15, long arms. When he gets his arms on somebody, he'll hold them and he'll shut them down. Olivier Vernon was able to dislodge himself from Smith in that game a lot, which you do not see a lot of players do. I thought it was a very, very impressive performance by Olivier Vernon.
I agree with you.
By the way.
Yeah, they got pressure from all different angles, mm-hmm. but specifically Vernon, and Vernon's not going to get a lot of credit because his stats don't jump off the page.
Right.
It was Okwara who led the team in tackles and pressures and so forth. But I remember last season, John, the Dolphins played the Cowboys, and I remember going back and watching clips, isolations of Vernon against Tyron Smith. And you're right, Smith does not have trouble with most defensive ends in this league, but Vernon in that game, go back to that Dolphins-Cowboys game, and if memory serves me correct, that was when Romo returned after he had missed some time. So Romo just came back. He was very rusty.
That was his one win last year, actually.
Exactly.
Correct.
And then he wound up getting hurt again in that Panthers game on Thanksgiving. And Vernon gave Tyron Smith a very, very difficult time in that game.
Absolutely.
And this was a repeat performance because mm-hmm. the pressure that he brought opened up opportunities on the opposite end of the Giants' defensive line.
And Snacks, not a lot of numbers either in this game.
But
the
also
job he did against Travis Frederick and Zach Martin, the strength of the Cowboys' defensive line, again, help slow down Ezekiel Elliott.
And real quickly, if you don't think that Tyron Smith is a big man and is intimidating, just ask Eli Apple, because he took
on the
block when Smith came at him. I give Eli Apple a lot of credit, but I remember that distinctly. That's the one play that stands out to me. Tyron's coming at him to block up the field, and I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be a rough night for Eli Apple. And Tyron just let him fly.
Yeah, and Eli Apple doesn't shy away from contact.
No,
he likes
doesn't.
To tackle. He's a physical player. But, boy, I think it was either a screen or a toss play. I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah, I don't remember
but
either.
Yeah,
but
Smith
Tyron got out in the open field.
he was isolated on him, got his hands on him, and basically tossed him a good 5 yards. It was funny.
Oh, man.
It was funny. All right, 201-939-4513. We could talk about the issues on offense, too, if you like. Obviously, you would have liked better offensive performance, 10 points. Not going to get the job done in most games. You don't have a defensive performance like this. We could touch on that and anything else you want to talk about, but I definitely want to get that out on the Giants' defense because, again, I watched that full game on coaches tape, and they really played unbelievable football. 201-939-4513. Len in Columbia, Maryland, got in first today. Len, welcome to the show. How are you?
Okay. Hey, guys. How you doing?
How are you, buddy?
Hey,
well, Len.
Hey, Lance, a little shout-out to Lance here. After the game the other night, heading south on the turnpike, you got me all the way to exit 5, which was my goal.
Very nice.
It was a good post-game show. Good post-game
appreciate
show.
Appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Well, hey, 9-4, 3 to go, playoffs in sight. I don't want to sound desperate, but we just got to make the playoffs. We just got to make the playoffs.
Well, Len,
we can't go another year.
I don't care about going another year, but when you're 9-4 with 3 games to go and a basically 2-game lead over everybody else, you're damn right you better make the playoffs. Because if you don't make the playoffs, you're looking at a collapse, which you don't want to have to deal with.
Okay. You know, the measuring stick, John, the measuring stick, you know, I know one season at a time, but in the NFL you just can't go 5 years. I mean, that's a dismal stat.
That's fair.
I think we're going to make it. I'm confident. You know, play hard. You know, 4 o'clock on January 1st, check it out. Let's see where we are. And I think it's going to turn out for us. Hey, just one comment you made about the linebackers playing well the other night. You know, when the linebackers play well, play their game, this defense is, I mean, it's top three. Even when the linebackers aren't playing well, Pittsburgh, it's still a darn good defense.
Yeah, and Len, you know what? I want to add something real quick on the linebackers, Len, real fast, and then I'll let you continue.
I thought
they were so disciplined on play-action passes because that's how the Cowboys eat everybody up. They run it, they run it, they run it. They play action, and then Prescott either goes deep off the play action or he'll find, you know, Witten or Beasley in the middle of the field because the tight ends get drawn to the line of scrimmage. I watched every play action pass the Cowboys throw. I'm not sure if they, you know, knew the Cowboys' formations or could tell if it was run pass based on the play or what, but they seemed to know when it was a play action pass and when it was a run. That's how well they played it.
They were at the top of their game, Sean. That group. I mean, it's not the best linebacking crew in the league. Let's not kid each other. But that group played as well as it could as a unit on Sunday night against the Cowboys. And that's what made you guys were raving about the defensive effort, rightly so. I mean, terrific. Hey, a couple of shout-outs. I told you early in the season, Okwara was our Daniel Hunter from up in Minnesota.
Who
was a third-round draft choice. They're the same size, coming out of major college programs. This guy, Okwara, is our Daniel Hunter.
Well, remember, it took Hunter a couple years to get where he is today, first of all, and he was a third-round pick. Okwara is an undrafted free agent. And let's see Okwara do it for more than one game before we start calling him Daniel Hunter.
I agree. I just have this feeling. I think this guy is I think he's going to be that kind. He's going to be that kind of player.
Yeah.
Hey, a couple of shout-outs to a couple other players. Lance, you referenced the play. I think it's the same one that I was thinking about while I was waiting to get on. That DRC made in the third quarter.
When he knocked the ball away.
Wow. What a play, Lance.
Absolutely.
Holy cow.
I mean, you couldn't have had better positioning and better discipline in not receiving a penalty
now,
as a result
of
that.
In fairness, if Prescott throws that ball ahead of Bryant,
or
it probably gets
too,
completed.
Perhaps.
He did throw it behind them on that deep crossing pattern.
Well, okay. I'm raving about DRC here.
Of course,
that was a great play.
No, it's still
now,
a great play, regardless.
Over the years, there's always it seems like every 4 or 5 years, I latch onto a player, and I can remember going as far back as Gary Reasons guys, and I always felt like when Reasons was on the field, good things happened for the Giants. It wasn't necessarily Gary making all the plays, but I just got the feeling. Good things were happening. You know, over the last couple of years, I wish I could cite this in statistics, but I get the feeling when DRC is on the field, guys, good things happen for the Giants.
He's a good player.
There's something about the guy.
Well, Len, look at
the scheme.
Len, look at what happened in the last two seasons when DRC's been banged up during the course of a game and they have to take him out and then the replacement comes in.
And again, he's playing the slot this year too, Len. You know how tough it is to cover these really quick wide receivers in the slot? He's been great at it.
Oh, man. I feel when he's on the field, I feel every confidence we're going to make a stop.
Oh, yeah.
And Jenkins, let me just say something about Jenkins. It's been years, maybe decades, that we've seen a quarterback play to the level that Janoris Jenkins is playing.
This is the best single season I've seen a cornerback play since I've been here, and it's not close.
Yeah.
Not even. We can go back. I mean, you want to go all the way back to Mark Collins if you want. I mean, this is just. It's otherworldly with Jenkins. And now I'm not saying he's the best cornerback of all time. I'm just saying from what we've seen.
Yeah.
The level of play from Jenkins is really unbelievable.
No argument.
Let me ask you a question that only the fine eye of Lance and John could catch.
Oh yeah.
I got the feeling the other night when Eli went under center and was trying to figure out the defense and doing all his pointing. And that's not a negative. That's Eli. That's what we do. Let's run the best play we can. I got the feeling that after Eli got that play set and went back onto center, did you notice the defensive line jumping around into different positions?
I will say this, Len. I think that's a very good and keen eye pickup by you. It did seem like, specifically on running plays, that the Cowboy defensive line was doing a lot of shifting before those plays.
Yes.
And you wonder if they had some type of keys where they could kind of figure out where the running plays were going. But in general, the Cowboy defense is pretty simple. They don't do a lot of different stuff. So in the passing game, you're either going to see, two deep men under, cover two, things like that. But
I
saw what you saw on running plays. The Cowboys defensive line did seem to shift. And by the way, it also seemed like Sean Lee was filling those gaps
God.
Knew exactly where the run was going.
Played a phenomenal game. I mean,
Sean
he had 18
Lee,
tackles.
I hate to pat any Cowboy on the back. Holy cow. That was You can't play a better game as a middle linebacker than Sean Lee played the other night. That was unbelievable. The guy is really, really good. Hey, one more thing. Look, the offensive line, we're not going to switch anybody around. I mean, it is what it is. We just, we have to play the next three games, play as well as they can. Maybe Pugh gets back. Maybe he doesn't. And we just got to look at these guys and they just, do the best they can. And, geez, I can't go another year without the playoffs. We got to make the playoffs.
We're with you, Len.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for waiting.
Yep. Question. The Cromartie player talking about, was that the play where he followed Dez across the field?
Yes.
And then the ball, I think, hit off his shoulder pad on the play?
Well, I don't think it hit off his shoulder pad, if I'm correct. DRC got his hand.
Did he get a hand
deflected right on his hand. That's what I recall.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it went off the shoulder pad.
It was the one where Prescott rolled out and he rolled towards the left
side. Well, Dez is coming this
right?
way and DRC's trailing
correct.
Him and then DRC puts his hand out like that.
And Prescott had rolled out on the play,
believe Prescott did roll out.
Same play. 201-939-4513. Charles in New Mexico. He's up next. Charles, thanks for getting up early with us today. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing great, Charles. Thank you.
Good in New Mexico. A lot of quiet here. It's awesome. Hey, one of the stats that definitely stood out, the defense was phenomenal, okay? But the Cowboys were 1-15 on third down.
Great number.
For 6%. I mean, nobody's done that to them all year, okay?
Oh, no. Absolutely
not. And you brought up Witten. Witten looked old for the first time ever. He looked old.
I'll tell you what. Charles, in the passing game, maybe, I thought he actually did a pretty good job run blocking in that game, though, to be honest.
Oh, he's a great blocker, but I mean, in the passing game, he wasn't there. He was a non-factor for the first time in forever, and we did a great job covering him. And another thing I want to bring up is, we got to make the playoffs, like the last caller said, but here's the thing. We got a Sunday game in the afternoon. Let's beat Detroit, and we turn around right away and play another hated team on Thursday night. So we can wrap this stuff up and get a playoff spot in Philadelphia, don't you think?
Well, if they beat Detroit and then they beat Philly, 11 wins is going to get you in. 10, I don't think, is guaranteed, depending on if you get to a tiebreaker.
And, Charles, that's why I think it is important to beat the Lions because, frankly, winning on the road against division opponents and the Redskins and the Eagles is not going to be easy. You know how these Eagles or Redskins games go. They're going to be a pain in the rear end. So I don't want to have to go into these final two games if I'm the Giants knowing I got to even win one out of two. I want to be sitting pretty at 10 wins heading into those final two games being like, we can have a little fun here. We can relax. We're going to try to win the games. But it's not life or death with every play. You know what I mean?
And you don't have to worry about another team losing or something
like
that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, I appreciate you guys taking my call. Let's go Big Blue.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate the call. 201-939-4513. Abdul in Minneapolis on line 2. Abdul, how are you, pal? What's going on, man?
Not doing too good today. It's negative six right now, and it's going on to negative 18 this weekend.
Well, Abdul, here's what you do. You go on your couch, you get your little fleece blanket, you put on the replay of the Giants-Cowboys game, and you feel a lot better about yourself.
Yeah, too bad I got to work, right?
that is too bad, yeah.
That interrupts the play. Yeah.
So anyway, first thing about Olivier Vernon, he had this play against Tyron Smith where he actually stood him up, shed him, and then made a tackle on Elliott.
Yep.
No one does that.
Nope.
I was like, how strong is he? It was incredible. He literally stood up Tyron Smith, shed him, and then made a tackle with Elliott. I'm like, this guy he's an incredible player. It really opened my eyes about, you know, because, you know, I think he's so steady, and he's not too he doesn't dance after plays or whatever, so you don't really notice him. But if you watch the tape, he stands out almost every single play.
He's a great player. He's a great player.
Well, and if you're up close and personal with him, his arms are humongous, so it does not surprise me that he's knocking over a guy like Tyron.
In length and width, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're talking about the pythons, as Hulk Hogan used to refer to, the 24-inch pythons.
Yeah, they're monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it showed on that play. Second of all, I was listening to WFAN yesterday, and I heard an interesting theory about Flowers, about what could potentially be done with him. I think it was Carl Banks. They said maybe treat the situation like, okay, what would you guys do if Flowers got hurt? Like, how would you rearrange the line?
You know, we talked about this. If Flowers would hurt and you needed a full-time left tackle, if he was 100% healthy and ready to go, I would consider putting Pugh out there, to be quite honest with you. Otherwise, I mean, I guess you're looking at either Hart or Newhouse there, right, to move over?
Well, Petey's on the roster, too. I mean, but the fact that he hasn't gotten in yet.
Abdul, real quick, here's how I look at Will Beattie. They've had every opportunity to get Will Beattie on the field, whether it's moving Hart inside, moving Newhouse inside, whatever. They've had a million opportunities to do it. I haven't seen them do it yet. So the idea that they're going to now make him their starting left tackle at Eli Manning's blindside, I'll believe it when I see it.
No, Pugh probably makes the most sense, and Newhouse could play guard right now.
I didn't mention Beattie. Carl Banks just said maybe right now that this guy Flowers is such a detriment to this offense that maybe he should be treated like he's injured and go on like the way, like, you know, you would make maybe this week, start this week, sooner than later. Treat it like Flowers is injured and rearrange your line the way you would do it.
Well, I mean, I don't think you have to treat him like he's injured. I think you just make a lineup change. I think, Abdul, I heard that bank spot too, and I think the better point he made, and I think this is the one that I would consider, is have the tight end lineup on his side. Get a chip.
Right.
Have the running back give a little knock coming out of the backfield to give him a little bit of help there so that he doesn't have those types of consistent issues on that side of the line.
That was my next point, saying maybe use a jump-up package. Everyone says once you use a jump-up package, you kind of are telegraphing the run.
No, but Abdul, you don't have to use a jump-up package to chip. I'm just saying you don't have to use a jump-up package to chip. You can have Will Tye line up in 11 personnel and just chip before he goes out in his pass route. You don't need a jumbo package chip.
Fair enough. But even if you do use a jumbo package to maybe make the run a little more consistent, you can still pass out of it because we have good enough receivers that could beat, you know, the other quarterbacks. It's not like we can't pass out of that jumbo package. I think people think, you know, once you're the extra lineman, you have to run because you're taking one of the receivers out of it.
Abdul, in fact, if you go back to the play that Romeo Okwara got his sack on against the Cowboys, they had six offensive linemen in the game. Joe Looney was the extra offensive lineman, and that is actually who Okwara beat to get that sack. And guess what? They passed out of it. And on that play, Ezekiel Elliott, I believe, pass protected on that play as well. So, you can send three or four guys into a route. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Abdul, your point about, you know, if you're bringing the extra offensive lineman, it looks like you're going to run. As long as everybody executes, who cares if they think you're going to run?
Sure,
if you get pan on pan and you block accordingly, you should be able to get some positive yardage out of it. Teams that want to run and know they can win the battle at the line of scrimmage, they don't care whether the opposition knows that they're going to run. They do their job and they go out there and they win their battle. So, I mean, whether or not it looks predictable to me is meaningless. If you execute the play, at the end of the day, it's going to be a positive play.
Lance, I'm not sure about that. I think sometimes being predictable could be deterrent. A perfect example, the last phone call talks about how good Lee looked. Lee knew exactly where the running plays were going to happen because he studied the films, he knew our tendencies, and he knew where the ball was going.
Well, but Lee so also – but here's the other thing, Abdul, and I watched Lee all throughout that game. Lee also has a knack for finding every gap humanly possible, even if you execute your job. And there were points where there was a space and Sean Lee would get there. I mean, he's a very unique player, and he's a guy that can also run – sideline to sideline in the blink of an eye. I mean, he would be on the right side of the field, and he'd be making plays on the left side.
In previous games, you had inside linebackers that weren't as talented as Lee doing the same thing and disrupted the running game as you know, because we are predictable. So I think
But that wasn't the point, Abdul. That wasn't the point I was making. I was talking specifically when they have the extra offensive linemen in. I mean, you're referring to plays where they have five offensive linemen in and not everybody's winning their battles. Hey, I get that. There's plays that you can point to. I'm talking about when you have the extra offensive linemen in and it may look predictable. As long as people are blocking and doing their jobs, you should be able to get a positive play on that. I'm not talking about a home run play, but a positive play that's not pushing you back.
Well, anyway, this week is the anniversary of when the Metrodome collapsed, and I have pictures. Like I live right across the street, so I'm just remembering that. Actually, I had tickets for the Minnesota game that game, and it moved to Detroit, so I was kind of bummed out about that.
Yeah, so I guess yesterday would have been the day that we were in the air, and we had to be redirected to Kansas City before we went to Detroit to play the Vikings there.
Exactly. All right, guys, I'll talk to you next week. Take care, man.
Thank you, Abdul.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
And again, you don't have to go jumbo to help out on the pass rusher. I mean,
running backs,
teams
tight ends.
Do it all the time. You know, they chip and then they go out into their pass route. I don't think that's necessarily a thing you have to do. Now, do I object to going to a jumbo package and trying to power run a little bit? Absolutely not. But I think that's separate and aside from an perceived issue that a caller might have with Eric Flowers.
Well, and they've been effective when they've utilized the jumbo package. So that's why I can understand when fans are saying, why don't they use that a little bit more often? I completely understand that. As far as, if you want to play a hypothetical situation out where, what you would do if you had to replace the left tackle, and I brought this up on yesterday's show, John, Justin Pugh's been on the record saying that the reason why he's playing at a very high level this season is because he's comfortable for once at the guard position,
right,
and they haven't been moving him around. So I think at last resort, you'd consider maybe moving him to left tackle, but it wouldn't be choice number one because he's finally comfortable at a specific position. And remember, he also needs to get back to full health before you toy around with that idea.
And Abdul brought up a great number here on the Cowboys' third down percentage, 1 of 15 in that game. They are now 12th in the NFL at 42%. Before that 1 of 15, Dave Dominic and I did some advanced calculations here. They would be at 46%. That would rank them fourth.
Yeah,
so one game against the Giants dropped the Cowboys from fourth to 12th. So the Giants stopped the fourth best third down offense in the league and held them to 1 of 15 on third down.
Well, I'll even take it a step back further. They were, I believe, 1 for 9 the previous week against the Vikings. So I would be curious to see what they jumped the last 2 weeks, because this is the second straight week that the Cowboys have had an issue on third down.
That's a good question.
So they may have been even higher than fourth the previous week entering the Minnesota game. I'd have to carefully look at the numbers, but this is back-to-back weeks where the Cowboys have had trouble on third down. Now, in the Vikings game, a lot of those third down struggles were self-inflicted wounds. They fumbled a snap, they had some penalties, and so forth. There weren't many self-inflicted wounds against the Giants. It was the Giants wreaking havoc and causing a lot of trouble.
Cowboys were third in the league on third downs heading into the Vikings.
So they were one position up
the
previous week before the Giants game. So they've gone from third to 12th over the last 2 weeks.
Of course, you would like to see the Giants do better than 2 of 14, which isn't much better than 1 of 15.
No, not at all.
Which is one of the reasons they only scored those 10 points.
Well, and that's why, this turned into a defensive battle. It was both defenses that I thought really set the tone. And, it's an Odell Beckham big play that essentially decided it.
And that's why you have guys like Odell Beckham Jr. He made the big play. Dez Bryant did not. Ezekiel Elliott did not because of the Giants' defense. And the Giants come out with a victory. And I think both those defenses probably played their best defensive game of the year. Only 260 yards of offense. In fact, you look at the offensive stats.
They were identical.
They're almost exactly the same. The total yards is identical. Third down is nearly identical.
Very similar.
How the rushing and passing yards are – actually, in fact, the rushing yards weren't that much different either. The Cowboys had, 110 rushing yards, I think, give or take?
See,
and I think
Dallas,
the Giants were at, 95, right?
The Giants had 93, I know. Dallas had 108.
which isn't that big of a difference.
15-yard difference.
So, I mean, you're looking at these numbers, and the offensive numbers really for the two teams were almost identical. Let's go to Jason in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Jason. How are you?
How you guys doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, thanks for coming aboard, Jason.
Times, but
appreciate it.
Yeah, I couldn't really get through. I'm not going to be one of them Debbie Downer, you know, Giants fans that talk about all the bad. But, yes, there are deficiencies. Eric Flowers couldn't train in the offseason. He was hurt, bad ankle. You can't blame him for that. So
Jason, hold on. I don't want to get on you too much here, but he was a full go in spring and summer practices. So it's not like that ankle shut him down the whole offseason now.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, at some point he had to heal and he really couldn't, you know what I mean, go out and fully, you know, maybe the karate stuff and things like that that people talk about.
That's some other offensive line to go through.
That's fair.
Yeah. I want to talk about utilizing some of the deficiencies for good, because I remember they had a play where Adams lined up in between Flowers and I think it was Pugh. He blew his coverage. Guy went around him, but Adams went for like 10 yards because he had that open hole, and maybe
Perkins,
doing things like that. And I also want to talk about my question really is. Romeo Okoro, which is – I'm a Notre Dame fan. I knew he was going to do good. I couldn't believe he was undrafted. But if he does well, you know, for these last games, is it going to be harder for the Giants to, you know, make a decision to keep here, Paul, for a certain amount of money that he's going to want?
I don't think –
you have a guy who can play to his caliber?
Well, first of all, I don't care what Okoro does in the final three games of the year. I'm not going to make that determination that he's just as good as Jason Pierre-Paul off of four games.
It's
so
a very small sample size here.
That's number one.
Yeah.
And number two, I think their decision on Jason Pierre-Paul will be what it is regardless of how Romeo Okoro plays. They'll decide that we want to offer him X number of years at X number of dollars. If we think his play is worth that number, that's what the Giants will make the offer of, whatever that ends up being. I don't think Okwara's performance over the next 3 weeks will have much of an impact on that, in my opinion.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind, Jason, is the fact that depth is important in the National Football League. And just because you feel you have somebody that steps up off the bench doesn't mean you can just say, well, you know, we'll allow our starter to walk.
And all year we talked about, Jason, how many snaps JPP and Vernon were playing. Well, if Okwara shows he can play, well, then he's your third guy in that rotation, which is something you do need.
So it's more rotational, not...
Of course. Well, that's what Spags
really
loves. Spags likes to move guys in and out.
It's going to be money. Next year is going to be about money, you know? I mean, we spent a lot of money to have the players that we have. So what do we do to keep, you know, I think Hackens and Pierre Paul, they both have to stay on the team. But if you have someone that can fill that sort of that void of what Pierre Paul does, and we've seen that one game. I was always big on him because I saw how he played in Notre Dame, and I can't believe he was undrafted, but Sheldon Day was. You know, that's another story, but I think he's good. I think second, third year, he's really going to be good. But money's going to be a problem next year. How do you build the offensive line unless you draft, because you're not going to have much money to spend? So if you can save money by keeping Romeo Okwara, if he plays that good, is it good or bad for Pierre Paul?
Well, but remember, I mean, there is still a significant gap, Jason, between JPP and Romeo Okwara. And I'm not taking anything away from Okwara, but you're talking about losing a game-changing, disruptive player and then taking a chance on a player who's shown flashes but clearly has not been on the field nearly as long as JPP. It's a little bit different if you're deciding between two established veterans. Then maybe it's, okay, a little bit easier to make the decision. You let one guy walk. But when you're talking about an undrafted rookie versus an established veteran, I mean, those are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Yeah. And keep this in mind, Jason.
Yeah. You know, next four games, three, whatever's left. If he does well, he really gets the sacks, gets the pressures. Does it really make that front office decision harder to give, you know, that kind of money to someone like Pierre Paul, who I love but has had some injury issues, you know, back, groin, and stuff like that?
Jason, again, and thanks a lot for the call, man. We appreciate you listening and jumping on board with us today. I think the Giants will determine what they believe JPP's value is, and they'll offer him a contract commensurate to that. They'll negotiate. If they can figure it out, great. I don't think that they're going to say, well, you know, we were ready to really break open the bank for this guy, but Romeo Aguara these last three games, I don't know if we want to pay him now. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the calculation here, in my opinion.
Well, and they'll also listen to what the coaching staff has to say, the outlook for Aguara, and how they think they can utilize him moving forward.
Great example. Do you remember people throwing parades for how great Kerry Wynn looked at the end of the year two seasons ago?
2014, yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah, let's not go nuts over a small sample.
You have to put things in perspective. And look,
Kerry Wynn's been a good rotational player, but he's not Jason Pierre-Paul.
Of course. It's the same thing. You know, this is a good parallel to when you can overreact after one or two games.
Good or bad.
Good or bad, exactly. Whether it be your offense, whether it be your defense, mm-hmm. You need enough of a sample size to make true evaluation. So, once again, Okwara played admirably. Deserves a lot of credit. Stepping in for a guy that has been one of the best defensive ends in the league this year, filling the void, going up against a top offensive line, delivering. Okay, now let's see if he can build upon that moving forward.
And in terms of moving forward, he mentioned the money situation. One, the Giants carried a lot of money over from last year to this year, number one. And number two, over the next 2 years, the Giants are going to have a lot of decisions they're going to have to make. You mentioned Hankins and Jason Pierre-Paul. Well, guess what? In 2 years, after the 2018 season, you're going to have – or rather, after the 2017 season, you're going to have – Richburg and Pugh that you're going to have to figure out. And then the year after that, you're going to have Landon Collins and Odell Beckham Jr. the same year. And Dominique Rogers-Cromartie is going to be that year as well. He has two years left on his deal. So you're going to have a lot of tough decisions coming up, but you cross those bridges when you get to them. You bring back as many good players as you can, as long as it's the value you want them, and then you figure things out down the road.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with respect to JPP's health moving forward, too. And, you know, what he's looking for is a player as well. You know, some guys want long-term deals. Others want short-term deals. I mean, those are conversations that the front office is going to have with him, and then they'll move forward with that. But it's always a good problem to have when your depth chart is delivering. It's a good problem to have because at least you know that in a pinch you have players that can step up.
And trying to figure out how to fit everybody under the cap, guess what? That's also a good problem to
have.
Yes. You'd much rather be having to do that than sitting there like the Raiders and Jaguars the last 5 years, having all this extra money to spend and no one good enough to spend it on. So
trying to overpay guys and so
now, forth. The Raiders are going to come on the back end of that now as all these young guys, Carr, Cooper,
Mac,
all these guys become free agents coming up here. And, you know, last year they paid Osemele, who came over from the Ravens, who's been a great offensive lineman for them. They're going to have to start paying all these guys as they get to free agency. They brought Donald Penn back this year, for example. So that's something they're going to have to figure out moving forward. But, again, it's a good problem to have.
Well, and this is something that the Seattle Seahawks have had to deal with, too. I mean, think about all those undrafted guys and late-round picks that they brought in, and then all of a sudden everybody has to test free agency. Can't keep everybody. Now, some of the guys they lost didn't necessarily come back to haunt them, like the Byron Maxwells of the world and so forth.
Russell Okung.
Correct. But you slowly and progressively have to make sacrifices because it's impossible to keep everybody under the cap.
You have to make tough decisions.
Yes, you have to. Every team goes through it. The Giants are not going to be unique compared to the rest of the league.
And again, the key is while you have these guys, and the Giants are in that period now, and I think that's evidenced by their 9 wins, I know a lot of fans have called them and complained about the draft class as well. Look at your impact players right now under their rookie contracts. On offense, you have Justin Pugh, you have Odell Beckham Jr., you have Sterling Shepard. On defense, you have Jonathan Hankins. You have Landon Collins. So you have some of these young guys that you drafted now making big impacts while they're on their very, very valuable to the organization rookie contracts, because you can then spend the rest of your cap money elsewhere bringing in the type of veteran free agents they did last offseason.
Well, and also some of those young guys that you named have also become household names, and the rest of the league is watching too. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously scouting to determine who they want to target in free agency, and you never know who's going to throw out a big splash there. And once again, it also goes back to the mindset of the player. Are they comfortable? Are they happy with the organization? Maybe they weigh that a little bit more than running to a place that could give them a little bit more money. We've seen players decide that.
201-939-4513. Matt in East Islip. He's up next. Matt, how are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Making my finals week a little bit easier.
Nice.
Thank you for that.
No problem.
That's always good. So I wanted to talk about I guess just one little thing on Flowers real quick, because everyone has their opinion, and I always have my opinion on him, so I figured I'll weigh mine in this week. I mean, the thing is, you know, it's week 14. Like, these people have to stop thinking that they're just going to miraculously switch everything around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like,
yeah.
It is what it is, right?
And I mean, by the way, Matt, I want to jump on that a little bit more here. Not only is it late in the year, they've still won 7 of their last 8 games. You don't want to go around messing with stuff when you've won 7 and 8 and you're 9-4.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you know, offensive tackles, offensive linemen aren't switch hitters in baseball. You can't just be like, oh, I'll just move them to the right side. Well, guess what? A good defensive coordinator is going to say, hey, guess what, Von Miller or Khalil Mack or whoever it is.
They'll make adjustments, too.
There's the weakness. Let's go to that side.
And by the way,
they'll move guys around.
Eric Flowers has not played a position other than left tackle in 5 years. His last 2 years in college, he was a left tackle. He's been a left tackle since he's been in the NFL. So you're, and I don't know if he's ever played guard. He played right tackle his freshman year in college. So he'd be have to go back a long time to remember how to play a different position.
I mean, no offensive line coach in the NFL turns on the jukebox and plays a game of musical chairs and says, you know, let's just fit guys in on the line. I understand that's my favorite line, but the truth is, I think you bring up an excellent point, Matt. You know, continuity, consistency, and chemistry are so important for the O-line. When you get this late in the season, you don't all of a sudden start picking names out of a hat and saying, well, we'll move this guy to the left side, we'll move this guy to the right side. It's just impractical.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's comical when I hear some of the people, because they just think, like, they can coach it up and it's no problem. But the thing is he doesn't. It doesn't matter. First of all, I love when people say, well, he's naturally a right tackle. I mean, John, you just said it. He's really never played right tackle. So you can't just say he's a natural right tackle. All right, he's too tall for guard to get the leverage on the defensive tackles. And honestly, you know, what are you going to do? His technique is bad. It's not like he's miraculously going to play better.
And Matt, I want to throw on this on top of it, too. You have some dynamic pass rushers that play left end now.
Yeah.
I mean, Von Miller plays left end. J.J. Watt plays left end. Ryan Kerrigan plays left end.
You don't hide an offensive
Graham
lineman.
Brandon Graham plays left end a lot. So,
no,
you cannot hide an offensive lineman. They're going to find you.
Yes.
And if he's at right tackle, guess what? Eli Manning will get hit in the face instead of getting hit in the back. What's the difference?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly right. I just want to bring up one more point, if you guys don't mind, on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they did against the run, obviously, because we know Dallas is a run-heavy team, with putting Kennard. I think, see, now Kennard is a little bit more playing his natural position like he did in college, getting his hand in the dirt. He's playing a lot better this year. Also, he's healthy this year, which is a big difference.
Absolutely.
And it also helped out Aquara, I think, having him a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. And then what they did, which I liked, they brought Collins down a little bit more because they had Leon Hall in the back end, which I like that dynamic a little bit. It gets, I think, your best 11 on the field. But I like the way that it made a little bit more pressure from Spagnuolo that they threw out there, and I just liked it. It was a little bit more aggressive, and it didn't leave them liable. So, I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts on that,
hey,
guys.
Matt,
thanks so much.
I gave you the number Pro Football Focus at, and thanks a lot for the call. The Giants blitzed more than any of the game this year, so they were certainly aggressive, but at the same time, Lance, no big play. So I agree with them 100%.
Yeah, but in fairness, I mean, they've been allowing Landon Collins to come up to the line of scrimmage throughout the season.
Sure.
It wasn't like all of a sudden they were debuting him, and we know he's much more effective when he can pursue the ball down near the box and even try to, you know, pursue guys who are catching footballs out in the flat. So, I mean, that to me is something that you want to continue to utilize. And, you know, they were just well-disciplined. Everybody stayed within their spaces. Communication was key. And that, under those circumstances, is going to limit the big plays.
And by the way, he brought up Devon Kennard. It reminded me of a play that I watched when I was going through the Giants' defensive tape. Remember that fourth quarter play on 3rd and 11 when Dak Prescott audibled into a toss play?
Yeah, which I still don't understand that play to this minute.
Real odd, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's the funny thing. I looked at the tape. The reason he audible to that play is that the Cowboys would have had 4 blockers on 3 Giants on that toss play. You know what happened, though? One player didn't get the play change. Everyone ran block on that play except for Ronald Leary,
well,
who
that
pass protected, and Devon Kennard ran.
Right,
literally,
right.
Every player turned to sweep and went towards the Giants. Ronald Leary started backpedaling, and Devon Kennard ran right through the hole and tackled Ezekiel Elliott for a 6-yard loss. So
that would explain
it's little things like that that you don't see until you look at the tape. That show why some plays can short circuit. They have to play Ronald Lewis looking around like, what happened?
So that was a breakdown.
Yep.
And listen, that's going to happen sometimes. Yeah, it was funny. I went back and I watched Jason Garrett's press conference because we obviously on the postgame focus on the Giants entity. And Garrett was asked about that play. And he said, well, you know, we like how we've run things out of that look before. He certainly didn't say, well, I went back at the film and I noticed that Leary was interested in pass protecting.
At that point, he probably didn't see it.
He probably, this was on Monday's press conference, too. I went back and I listened to Monday's. And he said that they do like the. Oh, no, of course. I understand that. I wasn't looking for a big time answer from him. But now that you've provided a little bit more insight, it perhaps is understandable why the play broke down and why they were still confident about it.
And it's funny, while he's making the call to audible Prescott, and I looked at this a few times, I just thought it was fascinating. First of all, he looks back and he goes like this to Prescott. Then he kind of leans into Travis Frederick, the center, and it looks like Frederick kind of told him something, and then he went into his stance, but then he still backpedaled like he was pass protecting. And then after the play, he like, goes like pumps his fist and was like, I know that was on me.
That was on
201.
It happens. Listen,
it does.
And it happens to a team that, you know, gets commended for having a very strong offensive line. See, they even have mishaps and shoot themselves in the field.
And Leary's a veteran. He's been on
and
the
Leary's been
for five
what
years.
I have argued is one of the most valuable players on the team this year, given the fact that they lost Lyle Collins.
He was their sixth offensive
filled
line.
Filled in, yeah.
201-939-4513. Kind of like Bobby Hart's been for the Giants this
year.
Who wasn't supposed to be a star to start the year.
Takes advantage.
Injury happens, and now him and Marshall Newhouse are both right now pretty valuable players based on all the injuries that have kind of gone up and down that line. Back to the phones. Tom in New Jersey's up next. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Tom. How are you?
Good. I know we're up against the clock. I got three quick things.
You're fine. Go ahead. You got plenty of time.
All right. The first one is I don't want to make this the Romeo Quarrel show, but you guys saw the film. You know, I just watched the game. He looked exceptional. You know, on TV, in the game. And looking at the film, I mean, do you, and again, nobody has a crystal ball, but do you think that he has the tools to at least fill in the, maybe not as well as he did against Dallas, but fill in, you know, good enough for these next three or four games with 00 and with wins sometimes? But, I mean, What did you guys see in looking at the film?
Tom, I want to see him do it more consistently because in the limited number of snaps he's gotten up until this point, you hadn't seen this type of production over the course of his shorter stints in the game. So I need to see it more. I need to see it again. But if he can replicate what he did against Dallas consistently, then, yeah, I think he could be a real valuable part of this rotation that could get Vernon and JPP down the road some valuable rest so they're not playing 90% of the snaps every year.
And the other thing to take into consideration, Tom, and I'm not taking anything away from the job that the Giants secondary did. They were phenomenal, but, you know, he benefited also some really good coverage down the field. What happens when there may be some issues on the back end and you don't have the benefit of the additional time? Because what stood out to me about the defensive linemen, John, is the fact that they were hungry and they were constantly fighting, even when it looked like Prescott had a little bit more time in the pocket, because the three sacks that they had for the most part were covered sacks where Prescott just didn't have time to throw the football and they just kept fighting and battling. So, you know, he showed his relentless nature in continuing to win his battles. But what happens when the quarterback gets rid of the football a little bit quicker? Then you need to see how players adjust.
And Tom, if you have a second, go watch Inside the Film Room. Papa and Banks broke down that play where Oguara got his sack, and you will see why Lance just called it a covered sack because they forced Prescott to hold the ball, and that gave Oguara a chance to get home.
Great. Understood. And that leads to my second point. You know, it's funny. When we picked up Leon Hall, I thought, boy, that was a steal. And then, you know, he was a healthy scratch, what, 4 or 5 weeks during the season. I thought, again, from what we saw, what we were able to see on TV, I thought he played an excellent game on Sunday, especially after Adams bit on that one play. I really thought that, you know, playing safety, he really did a very good job. What did you guys think about Hall, Sunday and you know, going forward with him in the second safety position?
Yeah, Hall played 24 snaps on defense over the course of that game. Just to give you an idea, otherwise it's safety. I'm looking for Andrew Adams on this list here. Adams played 45.
John, I would think most of that came in the second half.
Yeah, and frankly,
I know you probably can't tell, but I just from what I saw.
Right, and I think what the Giants did, actually, I believe they played a decent amount of three safety looks, especially late in the game. You really didn't see that fourth cornerback in the game, whether it was Sensabaugh or Trevin Wade. You didn't see those guys in the game a ton. I think a lot of the times when the Giants went to that six defensive back look with their, you know, three quote-unquote starting cornerbacks and then their two starting safeties, and then they would bring that third defensive back in, and I think that third defensive back was often a safety to give a little bit more run support options if the Cowboys decide to run it. And also, Leon Hall did a really good job against Jason Witten in week one. I think that's something they want to copy. Just for an example, in this game, Sensabaugh played just 15 plays, Trevin Wade played just 10, and Leon Hall played 24. So I think you saw those three safeties out there probably more than you would think.
Yeah. Yeah, and my last question on the offensive side, and I guess, you know, it mirrors what the caller before me said. Look, you know, it is what it is. I think things will be a lot better. Hopefully Pugh gets back for Detroit, because I think it's going to be a very, very difficult game. So hopefully we can score some points, and Pugh's going to play left guard. But I think, you know, Flowers is what he is. Hopefully he's going to progress going forward. But for this year and the playoff run, I just think they've got to give him a little help.
That's fine.
Some help on the left side. Because, you know, like you guys have said and everyone else has said, you know, we're not going to – there's nothing that can be changed at this point. So what do you do? The only thing you can do is tinker with what you have. And I think that, you know, by perhaps giving him some, you know, some help, you know, whether it's Ty, whether it's with a, you know, with one of, you know, if Pugh's back, you know, with the jumbo set,
extra offensive line.
I think that's what you have to do, because you cannot give up the ball, you know, with 2 minutes left, with 1 minute left. I mean, you've got to run out the clock with 2 minutes left. You just have to be able to do that.
Well, and they were able
appreciate
to do
the call,
that
man.
With
thank you.
The Cowboys in the first week and the Bengals, and, you know, they utilized the jumbo package. They used Brett Jones as a fullback. So when they have tinkered with the personnel, I mean, they've had some success with respect to that. One other thing I wanted to point out, John, you know, the caller was talking about if Justin Pugh returns, you know, hopefully they'll be able to pick up the offense. This is a Lions team that in each of the last seven games has not allowed more than 20 points in any of those games, and they've won six of those seven.
I found that stat today, too. They give up 20 points once, but never more than 20. And correct. By the way, one of those games, and people will say, well, who are the opponents in those games? Well, they did it to the Redskins, by the way, who are a top five offense in football. So that's nothing to sneeze at. A couple of the other teams, look, they did it to the Vikings twice. They've struggled. We get that.
Jaguars
struggled.
Saints, though.
Saints and the Redskins
doing that
are on
to the
that.
Saints
and even
and the
Eagles Redskins.
Well, the Eagles had 24, so I stay correct.
Saints and Redskins are on that list, folks. Those are two of the most explosive offenses in football. Do not sneeze at that.
It's a very good defense, and would, they've gotten progressively better over the last few weeks.
Do my math here. I'd say probably three safeties about 10 to 12 times over the course of the game, based on my quick numbers here. So, and it looks like Sensabaugh and Wade played 25 total snaps. So I don't know how many times they were in dime in terms of when they were the third, when they were the fourth.
Well, and Hall gives you versatility because he can play out of the slot too. So there's value in having him on
correct.
The field.
Correct. And I say three safeties with Leon Hall only because he kind of plays that hybrid position. He does a little bit
like
of both.
Like the Joker.
He could have also been playing corner in some of those spots too, depending on the play. I did not – when I was watching the tape, I was not counting formation. So I don't have that
disappointed.
Exact number.
It's really unfortunate that you didn't do that.
Final two calls. We can call Tino and get his yellow legal go pad out. I'm sure he has it on it. Let's go to Diego in Connecticut.
Good luck making sense of the markings. But
hi,
anyway.
Diego.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, Diego? What do you got?
First-time caller. Great show. So I just wanted to congratulate you and your team for
thanks
you
for
know,
tuning in. Appreciate
all the insight. I just wanted to talk about Eric Flowers. A surprise statistic that I saw on Pro Football Focus is that he was actually rated top five offense performers by for the Giants, and I think his rating was 70 out of 100.
Yeah, unfortunately, so, I think people saw that one play against Benson Mayoa where he basically ran by him and Flowers barely got a hand on him, and they assumed that's how he played the whole game. But you saw pressure come from the right side of the line, I thought, more than you saw come from the left side of the line. You had a couple stunts early where John Jerry and Bobby Hart got crossed up. You saw Bobby Hart get beat off the edge. Once I believe it was either DeMarcus Lawrence or David Irving. I don't quite remember. So, yeah, pressure was coming from everywhere. This was not a game where Eric Flowers was a turnstile over there getting beat left and right. It really wasn't.
Yeah, and I just want to add, I mean, you know, Rome wasn't built in one day. And, you know, as a Giants fan since I was, what, 9 years old, I, you know, I can remember about 3 years ago when they started 0-6. And, you know, I think that, you know, the back office and the front office have done a great job in just putting the defense, you know, pieces together. And as a Giants fan base, we just have to give them time. And hopefully during the offseason, we can address whatever holes we have, either by, you know, the linemen improving or, you know, getting some free agents or draft picks in, you know, in the offense. And, you know, I will say that I feel like Eli Manning, unfortunately, he looks really out of rhythm. Like, I was at the game with my wife, who's a big Cowboy fan, and you know, I had to take the train back home. But, it seems that Eli Manning is, you know, out of rhythm. And it seems that, you know, part is because of the line, part is because, I don't know, if, you know, just the running game. And, you know, I hope to see, you know, we see the Eli from the previous years where, you know, during the playoffs, he found a way to win. And, you know, I'll just take that offline. And thank you guys for taking my call.
Thank you for calling, Diego. Appreciate it. And, look, Eli was fortunate that he didn't have two more picks in that game. Or three, actually. Duran had the slant over the middle.
Barry Church.
And Barry Church had two. The one on the deep pass down the sideline. And then the one which really could have been a game killer, which would have gave the Cowboys the ball deep in Giants territory on that pass to Beckham on the sideline.
Yeah,
Cruz on the sideline. I forget who it was.
I forget who it was either, too. But there were certainly, to me, a lot of plays on both sides. I mean, you ran through all the Cowboys plays where the ball bounces a different way.
Oh, yeah.
That game could turn out very, very differently.
Yeah, even Beckham muffed the punt. He managed to recover
Beckham
that.
Beckham dropped the pass down the right sideline.
That
close
could have
to
been
the
a touchdown.
Zone. That's another play.
Cruz and Beckham both dropped passes that could have been for first downs that were kind of right in front of him. So, look, guys, these games are decided by a hair's breadth, both ways. One guy makes a play here. One guy makes a play there. It can make all the difference in these games. So, very small margins of victory here.
Yeah. And the caller, I think, or you brought up DeMarcus Lawrence, by the way, in terms of who gave Bobby Hart trouble. Lawrence didn't play that much because he was just coming back from a back injury. His snaps were actually down. They just mixed him in slightly, but he did not play that much.
DeMarcus Lawrence played just 13 snaps. Good call, Lance Meadow. I didn't realize it was that low.
Yeah, they didn't see a lot of DeMarcus Lawrence. They held him back because of the back issues.
By the way, this from Pro Football Focus. I just want to read this just to give you an idea in the offensive line. Then we'll get our final caller in here. This was the quote from Pro Football Focus. They send out Giants numbers to their media people. So this is what they had. There were no outstanding performances on the line against Dallas. No player stood out either way, good or bad, from the unit, as all five players graded average and allowed at least one, but not more than two pressures in pass protection. Overall, the unit allowed 8 total pressures on 31 passing plays, leading to a pass-blocking efficiency score of 79.8, which is arbitrary. That ranks 16 out of 30 teams that have played so far this week. So, according to them, they were right in the middle.
Right in the middle, yeah.
And it was spread out across the line. Again, at least one, but no more than two pressures allowed from each one of the five guys on the line. So
they were basically saying nobody really stood out, whether it be good or bad,
yeah,
essentially.
Exactly. All right, final call is Nugs, who has made the move to Kansas City. Hi, Nugs.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
All right, you're going to wrap us up today, Nugs. Make your point. What do you got?
Well, you know, my point is this, to all the callers or whatever. I don't know how many cavities the gift horse has because I don't never look him in the mouth. You know, we're 9-4.
Enjoy it. You're 9-4.
I'm 9-4. You know, I'm 9-4. I'm taking bubble baths and holy water.
That's some scene. Bubble baths and holy water. Can't say I've heard that or have seen that too often.
There
we go, Nugs. I like you live a life of luxury, Nugs. It's nice. It's nice to hear
that. You know, we can get these last couple wins and avoid those and avoid any tiebreakers or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? But I just want to make one statement and then I'm going to get off the line.
Yes,
you know, I don't know how many games we can win 7-10. If we can win, you know, three of them in the playoffs like that or whatever, we can win the Super Bowl 7-10, you know, I'll take it because I'm that guy. But I just want to see us. I mean, Odell Beckham, man, he's just got another gear. It's like he pulled away and then he pulled away again. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if you guys remember how when Percy Harvin was on the Seahawks back when they won, I just want to see us get the ball in Odell Beckham's hands more, you know, maybe on some jet sweep action. It seems like we've got that one play. I only see it like once a game where we'll run Odell on the jet sweep action and then run a like a screenplay underneath off of it, and they just pay so much attention to him. And I'm just thinking that maybe if we did a little bit more of that with Odell, it would kind of clean up the looks in the secondary so that Eli can maybe get some of these other guys going. So thanks for taking my call, and I'll take your answer off there.
And I'll tell you what, they're setting up that Odell end the round because they faked that play
that
three
set up
or
the
four
Jennings
times.
Touchdown against Pittsburgh.
Correct, and they also used the same exact play. Nugs, thanks for the call. They used that same exact play against Dallas this week. The play didn't work as well, but they did use the same play. So they're setting up that – team's going to start looking for the screen now, and that's when you give it to Odell and see if he has some space to do the end around.
They bite on one, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden he perhaps has some more wiggle room on the opposite side. When you get him out into open space, you know he can take advantage of that. I think that's been well documented.
Yeah, and give the Cowboys credit too. They did a great job in their punt coverage because he had a chance to return a few, but there wasn't a ton of space.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting that Nugs brought up Percy Harvin because I was going to say, you bring up Percy Harvin, I think special teams with what he did for Seattle in that Super Bowl run, it was the special teams plays, not so much what he did on offense that year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Beckham has had some opportunities on special teams, but I think people are enamored with what obviously he's been able to accomplish on offense much more so.
Lance, good times.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next week. And, of course, Lance will be on our pregame show as well on Sunday for MetLife Center 1130 on WFAN. Tomorrow, Dottino and Deal, the D&D boys, will be with you right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. It comes your way, as it always does, at noon on Giants.com. For Lance Meadow, our producer Dave Dominic, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.